ಗೋಪೀಜನಾವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರಧಾರಿ ಯಶೋದಾನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಮುನ ತೀರವನಚಾರಿ ಯಮುನಾತೀರವನಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ವಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪೀಜನವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರಧಾರಿ ಯಶೋದಾನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಮುನಾತೀರವನಚಾರಿ ಯಮುನಾತೀರವನಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ವಿಹಾರಿ
ಜಾಯಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಡಿವೈನ್ ಗ್ರೇಸ್ ಎಸಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವಿದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಶಿಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ್ ಕೀ ಜಯ್ ಅನಂತ ಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ವೃಂದ ಕೀ ಜಯ್ ಗ್ರಂಥರಾಜ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಕೀ ಜಯ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಅಂಡ್ ಗೌರಾಂಗ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಗ್ರಂಥರಾಜ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಕ್ಯಾಂಟೋ 5 ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ 3 Rishabhadeva's appearance, text 3. The verse is very, very long, so I'm just going to read the English translation. Lord Vishnu appeared before King Nabhi with four arms. He was very bright, and he appeared to be the best of all personalities. Around the lower portion of his body, he wore a yellow silken garment. On his chest was the mark of Sri Vatsa, which always displays beauty. He carried a conch shell, lotus flower, disc and club, and he wore a garland of forest flowers and the Kaustubha gem. He was beautifully decorated with a helmet, earrings, bangles, belt, pearl necklace, armlets, ankle bells, and other bodily ornaments bedecked with radiant jewels. Seeing the Lord present before them, King Nabhi and his priests and associates felt just like poor people who have suddenly attained great riches. They received the Lord and respectfully bent their heads and offered him things in worship. Purport. It is distinctly mentioned here that the Supreme Personality of Godhead did not appear as an ordinary human being. He appeared before King Nabhi and his associates as the best of all personalities, Purushottama. As stated in the Vedas, Nityo Nityanam Chetana Chetananam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is also a living being, but he is the Supreme Living Being. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 7, Lord Krishna himself says, Mattaha Paratanam Nanyat Kintidashti Dhananjayaha. O conqueror of wealth, Arjuna, there is no truth superior to me. No one is more attractive or more authoritative than Lord Krishna. That is one of the differences between God and an ordinary living being. According to this description of the transcendental body of Lord Vishnu, the Lord can easily be distinguished from all other living beings. Consequently, Maharaj Nabhi and his priests and associates all offered the Lord obeisances and began to worship him with various things. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text 22, Yam labdhva chaparam labham manyate nadhikum tataha. That is, upon gaining this, one thinks that there is no greater gain. When one realizes God and sees the Lord face to face, one certainly thinks that he has gained the best of all things. Raso pasya param drishtva nivartate. When one experiences a higher taste, his consciousness is fixed. After seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one ceases to be attracted by anything material. Excuse me. One then remains steady in his worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So Maharaj, the story of the pastime is continuing. Maharaj Nabhi, the son of King Agnidra and Purvachetti, he wished to have sons. And so he began offering prayers to Lord Vishnu. With a particular purpose. The purpose was to have sons. So thus those sons can carry on the legacy of this family. Generally, people want to have children, sons or daughters, because it's a fulfillment of their sense gratification. It is their happiness. Oh, to have a little baby who babbles and makes funny sounds and drools, and it's all part of the happiness for a parent. And while there is this kind of joy, great kings who are called Raja Rishis, they want to have sons for a particular purpose. Of course, fatherhood, all that. But higher than that, because they are great personalities, they always do things for a higher purpose. The higher purpose is to make sure that the legacy continues. To make sure that the great values of tradition that they have received from their forefathers is not wasted. It does not go into oblivion, but that it is maintained and that it is nurtured and passed on to future generations. In one sense, this is the meaning of parampara, right? If that were not the case, Prabhupada would have been very happy in Vrindavan and blissfully chanting and doing his reading and studying and never wanted to have more sons and daughters. So, expansion of lineage happens in two ways. One is through preaching, the other is through organic growth. And it's important because if you don't pass on the traditions, if you don't pass on the knowledge from one generation to another generation, it is an indication of hard-heartedness. It is an indication of dwindlement in compassion. Because future generations means that future generations are further removed from truth. Because with time, everything degrades. Time causes distance between a living entity's consciousness and truth. Therefore, Krishna's system is that time is cyclical, so that there is within it an adjustment, that Satyayuga comes back. And if great personalities don't move their generation forward, then the next generation will suffer terribly. What's the greatest suffering? Forgetfulness of Krishna. So it's very important for these kings to have very qualified sons. Naturally, for Maharaj Nabhi and Meru Devi, the personality of Godhead will appear. So that's why they are doing these sacrifices. They're being very austere in wanting children. It's not like ordinary people being austere for having children, which is part of being a human being, but that's, we know, ahara nidra bhaya maithunam cha samanyavetat parshubhir naranam. So having children, just for the sake of having children, Prabhupada would say that's like having children like cats and dogs. I mean, that happens even if one doesn't want it, because it's just natural in that sense. But there is a higher purpose. So those who are cultivating Krishna consciousness in the lineage of wonderful parampara that we have, there is a higher purpose for having children. There's a higher purpose for preaching. It's for the next generations. And Maharaj Nabhi's sacrifice was such that the personality of Godhead appeared. And he appeared, and he is very distinguished. We say distinguished guests. He is the most distinguished. This is the problem with the impersonalists. There is no distinction between the supreme and the living entities. Everything is homogenized. But from Bhagavatam we understand that the personality of Godhead is the most distinguished personality. Among all living beings, he is the most distinguished personality, Nityo Nityanam. And his distinction is on all levels. His body is much distinguished from the bodies of all other living entities. However, the residents of Vaikuntha have very similar bodily features. They also wear yellow silken garments. They also wear armlets, bangles, helmets, earrings. Yet, the Supreme Personality among those living entities is yet even more distinguished. That he has the mark of Sri Vatsa on his chest. It's a little tuft of hair that is symbolic or indicative of the residence of Lakshmi Devi, or the goddess of fortune in his heart. Therefore, he is called Srinivasa. In South India, every other person is called Srinivas. Every third person is called Srinivas. Why? Because every second person is called Venkatesh. Everyone has literally either Srinivas or Venkatesh. Somehow or the other, whether it is a man or a woman, they will have Venkata in their name. Or Srinivas. It's just so... So Srinivasa, Nivasa means the place of residence. Srinivasa means one who has given Sri, the goddess of fortune, residence in his, on his chest or in his heart. Sri has the mark of Sri Vatsa, very distinguished, and peacock feathers. So that's how he is distinguished in body. Distinguished in speech, because when Krishna speaks, the entire universe listens. So he's very distinguished in that way. And distinguished in mind, because here it says, Chetana, Chetananam. Among all those personalities who have a mind and don't use it, he's the one whose mind is perfect at all times. There was a... I'm going to pick on some persons here. Not on the persons here, but certain type of persons. There was a man who was diagnosed with severe brain damage. And so the doctors told him, we will need to perform a brain transplant. He said, oh. So they told him, you know, in the basement of our hospital, there are many brains that we have kept in storage, and you can choose whichever you like. I said, oh. So he went to the basement, and he saw them, you know, these brains were floating in this formaldehyde or whatever that substance is, liquid, and there was a price tag. So the first brain he saw, the price tag was $100,000. He said, whoa, why is that so expensive? So they said, well, it's the brain of a scientist. And with this brain, the scientist made many discoveries, came up with many theories and new inventions in the field of science, technology. So let me look at another one. And another one said, $80,000. Said, why is this expensive? He said, this is expensive because this is the brain of a musician and or an artist, and they came up with so many wonderful creations in the field of music and art. Very, very distinguished person. Said, oh, very nice. Then he saw another brain. It was about $90,000. So what's that? He says, the brain of a mathematician. It worked very quickly, could perform complex calculations and etc. Away there was a brain that was $250,000. So he's like, wow, why have you kept that aside? He said, that's a very special brain. I said, oh really? So in India we usually pick on the Sikhs. So I'm going to pick on the Sikhs for tonight. You can add anyone there you like. He said, that's the brain of a Sikh. I said, what's so special? He said, that is brand new. It has never been used. Huh? Brand new, never been used. So Chetana, Chetananam, among those conscious persons who are supposed to be mindful and mind, Krishna's mind is the most creative, most active. And by his consciousness, he sustains all other living entities. This is the power of consciousness. It has the strength to sustain other living entities. By our consciousness, we can sustain ourselves, and maybe, if you try very hard, for some time, another living entity. And then it changes. But Krishna's consciousness is such that he can sustain all living entities for eternity. Chetanas Chetananam. It's a very, very distinguished person. Therefore, when he says, Mattaha parataram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya, that there is no truth higher than me, it is a factual statement. That is because truth by nature means from which other things have reference. When things referred to truth, they have meaning. And in this world, we make distinction between absolute truth and relative truth. In fact, we don't even know absolute truth. Mostly it's relative truths. And our truths are only valid as long as the truths that they refer to are valid. All our theory of magnetism is true because to some degree they depend on the truth of electricity, theory of electricity, magnetic fields. Or our theory of atomic theory or things that we derive is true on the basis of more subtle or fundamental truths about the atom or electron and properties of an atom, etc. When the referred truth changes, all our other relative truths change. Such as, you know, people say, I love you. And when that circumstance on the basis of which that love exists, if the circumstance changes, love changes. So we operate in a very relative world. But Krishna says, Mattah parataram na anyat. That means I am the basis for all other truths to exist and be true. And the reality or the platform of truth for Krishna doesn't change because Krishna is not a changeable person. So his appearance at Maharaj Nabhi's sacrifice is a very significant event. And they say that the Maharaj Nabhi and his associates and priests, they worshipped him with various things, various articles. In our deity worship, it is called upachara. Upachara means articles of worship, ingredients for worship. And generally, we say shodasha upachara, 16 items that we offer. It includes a whole list of incense, lamp, water, flowers, sandalwood paste, other fragrances, madhuparka, something to eat, naivedya, etc. And in different ways, upavita, clothes, jewelry, they're all considered within the upacharas. They're meant for worship of the deity or the personality of Godhead. These things become valuable because they are meant to be used in Krishna's service. Persons who don't recognize the value of things, why do people don't recognize value of things? Because they don't understand their source. If someone understood source, they would understand value. The reason, you know, people are irresponsible with their money or irresponsible with their lives or is irresponsible with things that they have is because they don't recognize or appreciate where these things come from. Especially in the Western countries, food, for example. Especially in America. Food is served in like this gargantuan quantities. Small is this big, medium is this big, and large is like that. When I came to this country and I saw a large soda cup this big, I was shocked. I mean, most people in India take a bath with so much water. It's humongous. And then they ask you with a smile, would you like to supersize it? and a bucket of KFC, whatever. This is so big. And they eat about 50% of it. And the other 50% is thrown away, is discarded. You go to a restaurant and they ask for burger, fries, and this comes in such a big platter. Whew. What a family eats. One fellow is eating. And that too, you know, eats something, oh, I don't like it. And it's thrown away. Because the sense of how it comes or where it comes from is not fully clear. And so sometimes adversities are good teachers. Because in adverse conditions, people learn better. Therefore, we're put into material energy. It's an adverse situation. So we, with the hope that we learn. When people live poorly, or in an impoverished condition, they value even the small things. Nothing is wasted in the case of food. Of course, if you go to France, you pay 100 francs and you get like tiny little thing with a little decoration of, what's it called, julienned carrots, and that's really the special food that you have to eat. So the French are very good about not wasting food. I'm just joking. That's not the case. So it's when we don't appreciate the source, then we don't value those things. And then the next point that he makes, this is like the heart of it. Yam labdhva chaparam labham manyate na adhikam tataha. When one gains this, and in case this is the darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yam labdhva, after achieving this, manyate, one considers, na adhikam, there is nothing greater than this. For us, this verse in Bhagavad Gita is actually Krishna's talking about when one achieves the transcendental platform, one comes to this realization that there is nothing greater than this. And so his mind becomes very steady. The mind is which for us means the mind is unsteady because it is always always searching for something, it is wanting something. It is wanting that can be fully satisfying. And the fully satisfying feature for us is the process of bhakti. Of course, in the ultimate issue, it's the relationship with Krishna. And the process of bhakti is the medium within which that realization is possible. So having attained the process of bhakti, having come to performing bhakti, this verse is applicable. Yam labdhva cha aparam labham. The seed of bhakti, if you will, the taste of bhakti, the opportunity for bhakti is the greatest gain. There is nothing higher to achieve than this. Therefore, even the yogis, the impersonalists, they also come towards the process of bhakti. And if one thinks that after bhakti yoga, I'm going to look for something else higher, there isn't. Manyate na adhikam tataha. There isn't anything higher or more pleasurable than bhakti. Our experience may not be like that, because sometimes bhakti can be very excruciating. Then the conclusion is not that bhakti is not a good process. The conclusion should be that our application of bhakti needs improvement or needs us for us to revisit and reconsider a few things. And the reasons why bhakti doesn't satisfy the heart is because here Prabhupada is referring to the higher taste. Rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. This rasopyasya, we have not yet gotten the taste of bhakti. We may be doing activities of bhakti. Bhajana kriya may be happening. but the taste isn't come yet. Now, there's one mention of taste in the nine processes, or nine stages of bhakti, that is anartha nivritti, nishtha, ruchi, asakti, like that. That ruchi, what I'm referring to, is a little different than the ruchi that I'm talking about right now. The ruchi at this, I guess, our pre-anartha nivritti or within anartha nivritti stage of things, that ruchi is determination. It's characterized by determination. That things may be going up and down, but my performance of bhakti should not change. And within that, from that determination comes taste. Krishna says something similar in the Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, where he talks about a person who becomes free from duality. Dvandva mohena bharata. And for that freedom from duality, although dvandva mohena is not freedom, dvandva mohena means one is bewildered by duality. So he says, yesham tu antagatam papam. That until and unless we've been using the term fruitive mentality, but papa is nothing but a fructification of past fruitive tendencies and activities. We call it sinful reactions. Yesham tu antagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva moha nirmuktan bhajante mam dridhavrata. So the determination is the necessary tool to go beyond papa and dvandva. And from that determination comes taste. Therefore we are called upon to perform vaidhi sadhana bhakti. Vaidhi means rules or regulated. And rules are meant to give us what? Determination. Because if there were no rules, our bhakti could be sloppy or it could be whimsical. And whimsical nature is reflective or symptomatic of uncontrolled senses. Whimsical means, today I like it, I will do it. Tomorrow I don't like it, I don't care. This is whimsical attitude. So rules, vidhis, they help us go beyond that. And from that comes taste. From vaidhi bhakti comes raga bhakti, spontaneity. So ruchi means spontaneity. That our attraction to the activities of bhakti, the personalities within bhakti, is spontaneous. That it is becoming natural. And now, from the nine stages of bhakti, the dampers or the inhibitors are the anarthas. Because of anarthas, we don't get the full taste of things. Think of two examples. Suppose we have a severe tooth pain. Anyone experience tooth pain? Yeah. The nerves pull like anything, and you get a headache and can't open your mouth. And suppose you have something very nice to eat, hot samosas. We can't experience the taste of the samosa because there is an impediment, a sore tooth, or a nerve actually. Nerves are sore. A sore nerve by which we have this tooth pain. So we cannot enjoy. That's the anartha. It's the impediment. Or Rupa Goswami gives us the example of jaundice. Sitoptarasana. Because of jaundice, the liver is affected, that there is no taste for the sweetest of things. There's bitter. We have a bitter experience. That's true because of jaundice of the liver, figuratively speaking. Even the sweetest of persons, we have bitter experiences with them. In the sweetest of the holy names, like Krishna's name, we have bitter experiences with it. The sweetness of serving Krishna, we have bitterness in that. So the bitterness is not reflective of the people or the process. It's the reflection of our consciousness, our deceased consciousness. So the ruchi is not there. And we are recommended that anudinam, kintu anudinam adarat, that the cure is every day with great respect, continue bhakti. That means with determined effort. Cast aside the whims of the mind and just stay put. That determination is necessary. Then the experience of yam labdhva chaparam labham manyate nadhikam tataha. That conclusion becomes ours. Right now the conclusion may not be ours. It's something that we are operating with. And we have different degrees of realization of this truth. One degree is, prior to coming to the process of devotional service, if we consider today and look back at our lifestyles, then hopefully we understand, I don't want to be there, I'm happy to be here. That's an indication of yam labdhva chaparam labham. Because if that's not there, then we'd be walking out of this door. We have some ruchi. It's not that it's not there. It's at different levels or different intensities. When we look at our lifestyle, when we look at the kind of speech we used to use, I know, my gosh, every other word was something really bad. From such language, from such hobbies, I don't want to talk about my hobbies, but the hobbies that people have, or we used to have, the kinds of things that we thought was enjoyment, the kinds of foods that we thought were very good, etc., the kinds of friends and relationships that we were really hankering after, to hear. These are indicators of some advancement of taste, or some experience of taste. It's not the highest, it's not the fully intense taste, but it's in the right direction. And to get that full taste, we have to determinedly continue. Then is this paramdrashtva nivartate, the full taste. The full taste is a full experience of seeing Krishna face to face, or fully absorbed in serving Krishna. Okay, so that's some thoughts. Any comments or questions, Himanshu? Are you texting me the question?
Yeah. I just wanted to find something I wrote down. Oh. So, thank you so much for your class. It really was very helpful for me. You were mentioning at the beginning of class that in time, that due to the time factor, mm-hmm. the consciousness is separated from truth. And then you were talking about determination in the end of your class. And so I was thinking how remembrance is a very strong tool for a sadhaka. If you can simply remember, who am I, what's my relationship with this devotee or the devotees, and what's my intent in being here.
Remembrance is meant to counteract the influence of time.
Right. So I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about the relationship between remembrance and determination, and how also there's intensity of remembrance, which will probably affect the intensity of our determination.
In the Vedic system, there is so much emphasis on remembrance. Because with time, that's the way to preserve things. If you preserve it in books, it goes away. The Vedic system, things were never written down. They were preserved in people's memories. And each person who received truth or knowledge, their lifestyle was very important, because their lifestyle was determined. Their lifestyle made sure that the remembrance stayed. And how does remembrance stay with us? Memory stay with us? We discussed a few weeks ago. When the senses are pure. When the senses are impure, memory fades because of bodily conception of life. Impure means constantly going or absorbed in the objects of senses. Then the mind drifts from one to another to another, and memory is gone away. In Kali Yuga we say, memory reduces. The 12th canto it's described. Tatashchanudinam dharma satyam shaucham kshamadaya. Kalena balina rajan nankshati ayubalam smriti. With progression of time, these things degrade. Why? Because sense gratification becomes the norm of life, the goal of life. So determination is that I should keep my senses pure. I should keep my mind clean. And bhakti is meant to do that, because in that is the removal of other identifications. One way of thinking of contamination is the bodily conception of life, upadhi. So bhakti means sarva upadhi vinirmuktam. The mind is clean of these designations. Or false ego is clean of these designations. So what helps determination is the service attitude. If we are not enhancing our service attitude, our determination will become weak. I've heard it said differently. I've just used different language. That enthusiasm can only be sustained on a spiritual conception of life. If we don't have a spiritual conception of who we are, our enthusiasm will go up and down, mostly down, once in a while up. And when it is down, what is the one thing that gets our enthusiasm up? Is the presence of a very uplifting association. Immediately. Why? Because of their conception that is spiritual. Therefore, bhajana kriya, the strength of bhajana kriya is determined by the strength of sadhu sangha. These things nurture our determination, and they work together. The determination that nurtures faith. Faith nurtures taste. Taste nurtures determination, like that. Things move. Because we just described that the 9 stages of bhakti is also the growth of faith. Okay, anyone else? Oh, sorry, Asha, I can't see your hand. It's right behind Himanshu's head.
Head's too big. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Your hand?
Sorry, I forgot how I was going to phrase the question. okay. So you were mentioning this, specifically you were quoting from Nature of Instruction, the Adarat point, if there's like a reverence or the honor, the, you know, the respect that we give to the devotional activities, it raises us to a higher platform of pleasurable experience with those things, so we get a taste from that. I'm not saying what you said exactly, I'm just regurgitating it the way that I was able to process it. So in interactions with devotees also, it's meant to have that, like, an overall sense of respect that gives us a higher taste for devotee association than association outside of devotees. And also, in a term of instruction, Krishneti yasya giritam manasadriyata, even a person who's just chanting Hare Krishna, no special qualities there. We're supposed to have honor for them. So one thing that I thought of was like a contradiction, kind of, in how to apply this particular point. Like, in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, there's, you know, spiritual master A, B, C, D, E, F to Z, you know, and then there's groups, this, that, and we're all being connected to Srila Prabhupada through different persons and different sort of smaller groups than the larger group of the International Society of all devotees. Somebody has a spiritual master and they're hearing from him only, etc., especially at the beginning of our Krishna consciousness. But to be able to actually experience the happiness of the environment, we have to be able to really connect with the devotees who are around us. I might be living in, you know, Timbuktu, whatever it is, and I'm the only disciple of such and such spiritual master. So, you know, I have to still be able to feel connected with the devotees around me. So how does that happen while at the same time one is, quote-unquote, protected or hearing from one source, kind of thing? Because I see the other thing happens naturally, kind of, the self-destructive sort of group mentality thing that we don't know how to relate to other people who aren't fitting, like, a certain, you know, in that particular line of devotional, you know, presentation or something, you know. Because it seems important, because things can change, you know. We can have to go somewhere else, or we'll end up having to do services with other devotees or whatever. We need to be able to tap into the whole program. It seems like that's all we really have at the beginning anyway. Or that's one of the main things.
I don't know if you meant it that way. Perhaps not. But I'd like to edit one piece of the statement. That different spiritual masters are connecting us to Srila Prabhupada. These different spiritual masters, their goal is not that they're connecting us to Prabhupada. They're connecting us to Krishna. On the basis of Srila Prabhupada's teachings, our guiding principles for bhakti come from Srila Prabhupada's teachings. Because our experience of Krishna is by the agency of the spiritual master who's the member of the disciplic succession. Now what happens is, thinking of myself as belonging to a particular clan is part of my upadhi. I am such and such guru's disciple. And that distinction, as if it is so different, that such and such is a disciple of a different guru, it is still an upadhi. So as long as one has these upadhis, bhakti is not pure. We refer to that verse as a sarva upadhi vinir muktam. So a devotee's maturity is to have a very deep connection with one's spiritual master, because that's the link to the parampara. But if that link is strong, if that link is genuine, then one sees oneself and others as part of Krishna's family. And in that family, it's not this or that or this or that. It's all one family. But if the link is not genuine or strong or pure or however, then one sees it in a clannish way. And that brings friction. My group and your group and whatever. It's just terrible. So appreciating ourselves and others as all part of Krishna's family, that's important. So that's my thought.
Since you edited the statement, the reason why I'm putting it in that context is that within the International Society for Krishna Consciousness specifically, we have a connection with each other as followers of Srila Prabhupada.
Correct.
As opposed to, I'm respecting some other Vaishnava group over there. Like, I don't feel a connection with them.
Correct.
Not necessarily, I mean, in the greater realm of things, I'm supposed to feel a connection with all living beings, right? But
right.
Until we come to a higher stage, we're not going to recognize that. But at a lower stage, we can recognize a connection with one another as just followers of ISKCON.
That is correct.
So in that sense, yes. I'm saying, connecting us with Srila Prabhupada gives us a basis for being able to understand how to honor everyone else within this, you know, still small, but a lot bigger group of devotees who are following Srila Prabhupada's teachings.
Yes.
So in that sense, I think our spiritual masters do need to connect us to Srila Prabhupada.
Connect us to in the sense that everything is on the basis of Prabhupada's teachings, and yeah. He is our
common
Siksha Guru, common Siksha Guru from whom we're learning everything. His teachings, yes, in that sense, yes.
Yeah, so built into my statement, which you pointed out, is the fact that it seems like if we all are connected more to Srila Prabhupada, we'll be able to appreciate.
If you all connect to Srila Prabhupada and the mission of Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta,
yeah.
Then we don't see this. It's like, otherwise one cousin fights with another cousin, and we have this all. We begin the Bhagavad Gita with Dharma Kshetre, Kuru Kshetre, Samaveta Yuyutsavaha, Mamaka Pandavas Chaiva. Kimakurvata Sanjaya. That's how things begin for us then, right. Unfortunately. It's a clannish mentality. My sons of Pandu.
Yeah. So my question was, how do we be sheltered by our particular preceptors at the same time connecting with the larger family of devotees with whom we're associated?
And I answered it as, one should have the proper conception, one should hear the proper conceptions that we are part of Krishna's family. We're part of, in this context, Srila Prabhupada's family within ISKCON. And we can have different personalities taking diksha from different personalities, and that's totally fine. In fact, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's very nice. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. Krishna enjoys variety, and that's very nice. And we need to learn to respect certain differences of moods and nuances and inspirations. But everyone's trying to serve Krishna. This conception must be heard, discussed, emphasized, and carried within one every day. Otherwise it will not stay. Something that must be discussed. So,
thank you for letting me find that. Okay. Further.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. So we have our preferences, conditioned and unconditioned, and we.
You want to qualify that statement, we have our preferences? Because it may be within prasadam, but not within the personalities of Godhead. No?
Yeah, well, that too, but I'm thinking within just maybe certain practices that we enjoy more, and so that can lead to people
That's
hanging
clear.
Out and because they like to read Bhagavatam together, or someone else likes to read Bhagavad Gita together, or make samosas together, whatever.
Yeah.
But my question is then, I hope I didn't lose it within this qualification. We can appreciate that there's variety, or at least we can try to, right? Because we can understand Krishna is at the center, we're all trying to please Krishna. So if one notices that they don't like something, for instance, is it like a raga dvesha kind of thing, where they realize, actually, I shouldn't have this aversion? Or how do we politely respect, like, yeah, that's not my cup of tea, but he's trying, is it more like, he's trying to serve Krishna, clearly he's chanting Hare Krishna, so, okay, I don't want anything to do with that, but I'm asking. I hope it was clear.
I'll answer it a little differently in the context of this verse in one sense. We are not meant to appreciate variety only. We are meant to appreciate variety or the unity within that variety. This is our Siddhanta. Though Krishna says in the 9th chapter, Ekatvena Prithaktvena Bahuda Vishvatomukham, that there are many persons who approach me or the truth with different conceptions. Ekatvena, as that everything is one. So such persons, they try very hard to force everything down to the common denominator. It's called the monists. Prithaktvena, there are others who cannot see the oneness and they only see variety, and then in that variety they have to make distinctions with this versus that, and the demigods and my demigod and your daddy, my daddy is different from, you know, like that. So our Siddhanta is that we appreciate the oneness within the variety simultaneously. Oneness and variety simultaneously. When we can do that, then there is an appreciation for everything and everyone. Respect for where each person is, what they are doing, and how they are feeling inspired. If that simultaneous oneness and difference conception is not clear or not mature, then that's the things get a little fuzzy from there on.
Coffee cup that I remember seeing, or a mug that says, no matter where you go, there you are. So if Krishna consciousness is inwardly facing practice, then would it be comparable to being in one automobile in New Zealand and then in another automobile in England? Or so you're always there, but you're in a different automobile, your surroundings are different. So there's the variety, but it's always your experience that you're having.
Well, our experience can also be different. I think the oneness and difference conception is in reference to nityo nityanam, chetanas chetananam, that everything is sourced from Krishna. He is the one unique source of all this variety. He is the one unique inspirer of all this variety. And so variety has its substance, or has its adhara, foundation in him.
About simultaneous oneness and difference, and in, on a spiritual platform, it seems like that would be the most simple area to recognize that conceptually. Because there would be Krishna and then his parts and parcels, his devotees. Then in the material world, it almost seems like there's a third thing.
Illusion?
Yeah.
Even illusion has a foundation. So this is Vyasadeva's teachings. It's called Shakti Parinamvada. That the Supreme Personality of Godhead is an individual. He has multifarious energies that are non-different from him, yet he is different from all of them. So illusion is one of his energies, but simultaneously one and different from Krishna. If that were not the case, we would be in big trouble. Like, how do we offer our food? How does it become prasadam? If simultaneous oneness and difference were not true, then everything is maya. You take a potato, it's maya, it doesn't exist. How can you cook it and offer it to Krishna, and how does it become prasadam? If simultaneous oneness and difference were not a fundamental truth, the concept of prasadam would not be there. This body cannot be used in Krishna's service. The sound vibrations that we do, the speaking, the hearing, we wouldn't have a substance. Maybe you and I can have a separate conversation. It's 8:30 and I'd like to end. Okay? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.